Are you struggling with kids fighting, yelling, and more despite listening to the podcast and reading all the books? Parenting can be so overwhelming and exhausting. You know, I see you and I have something that will help. Mindful Parenting SOS. I'm offering free live mindful parenting sessions starting Monday, May 6th. Basically, live mindful parenting lessons that you normally have to pay for. So if you struggle with getting your kids to listen, tantrums, misbehavior, and feeling the guilt of yelling at your kid, then you should definitely get your spot in Mindful Parenting SOS. I'll be there to answer your questions in person, and if you can't make it, we will have replays available. Don't wait to get your spot now. It's free. Go to mindfulmamamentor.com/SOS to register. That's mindfulmamamentor.com/SOS. I can't wait to see you there. You're listening to the Mindful Mama Podcast, episode 84. Today, we're talking about the science of self-compassion. Welcome to the Mindful Mama Podcast. Here, it's about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. At Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you are thriving, when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm your host, Hunter Clark Fields, Mindfulness Mama Mentor. I coach overstressed moms on how to cultivate self-awareness in their daily lives and to take family and life to a new level of awakening. I've been practicing yoga and mindfulness for over 20 years. I'm the creator of the Mindful Parenting Course, and I'm the mom of two girls ages 7 and 10. Welcome. I am so glad you are here today, my friend. This is such a powerful episode. The interview you are in store for is absolutely one of my favorites. I'm talking today to Kristen Neff, and she is a pioneer in the field of self-compassion research. She's conducted the first empirical studies on self-compassion over a decade ago, and she has written the book called Self-Compassion, and she also teaches an 8-week training program called Mindful Self-Compassion. And this, her work is really at the core. I got so excited about this. As you'll hear me tell Kristen, her book is so underlined and dog-eared. I was so thrilled to read it. And her work is work I've been teaching for years, and it's in the Mindful Parenting course. And it really, this work on self-compassion is really at the foundation of the work that I do with mamas in my coaching and in my courses. And you're going to hear why this is so powerful and why this is so life-changing. And you're going to hear about the science behind it, which is so, so cool. So I cannot wait for you to hear what Kristen has to say. Coming up right now, we have the Mindful Parenting course is going to be starting. And this is a totally comprehensive 8-week course that teaches you not only does it teach you skillful communication, like there's a lot of people who are going to say, tell you what to say and how to respond to your kids. But the problem is that those courses and things are missing a really, really crucial component, which is that we are unable in so many ways to stop our biological, neurological reactiveness. And so what the Mindful Parenting course does is that the first part, we really work on scientifically based methods of helping you reduce your reactiveness so that you can respond rather than react. And it's work that takes time. So in this live course, what we do is we go over this work for the 8 weeks. We have live coaching calls every week. You have support. And then you get to take the course every single time it runs. So it's kind of like you're joining the Mindful Parenting tribe when you do that. So that is coming up real soon. And if you want a taste of that, I'm going to be doing a 5-week free live mindful parenting training. And if you're listening to this in real time, it goes from October 9th through the 13th. And you can sign up for that now. We have just put up a site where you can sign up for the training and make sure you are on the list. And you just go to mindfulparentingcourse.com/free training. So that's mindfulparentingcourse.com/free training. Kristen, Kristen, I'm so thrilled to have you on the Mindful Mama podcast. Welcome. Thanks so much for being here today.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Your work on self-compassion is so groundbreaking as far as shifting the way that we think about what it takes to sort of grow and what it takes to thrive, and shifting attitudes, hopefully, bit by bit, they're seeping into the culture. But what brought you to this research for you in your own life? What made you interested in this?
Yeah, well, you know, I certainly didn't invent the idea. I actually learned about self-compassion at a local mindfulness group I was going to, where I was learning meditation. And the group I was going to really emphasized self-compassion and the importance of being kind, supportive with yourself. So I really started practicing it, and it changed my life almost immediately. I couldn't believe the difference it made just learning to, again, be there for myself, support myself, give myself courage, encouragement, kindness, comfort when I was upset. It was like I had this resource that I didn't even realize I had. And I suppose, you know, my contribution was that I had done some work. I'd actually done 2 years of postdoctoral training with one of the country's leading self-concept researchers. And I'd been looking at self-esteem, and, you know, a lot of the problems with the self-esteem literature, it's not so much that self-esteem is bad, but how we get it is not necessarily very healthy. And I just thought, wow, self-compassion is such a nice alternative to self-esteem, because it's a way of feeling good about yourself, you know, but it doesn't require feeling better than others or being special and above average. So I kind of, you know, gave it a shot and developed a scale to measure it and started the research ball rolling. And now it just has a huge life of its own. It's really quite exciting.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you really point out in the book how self-esteem and self-compassion are different. So can you talk a little bit to that? What is the difference, and why is self-compassion trump self-esteem?
Right. Well, so self-esteem is basically, you know, partly depends how you define it. If you think of unconditional self-worth, well, then it's a little bit more like self-compassion. But typically, self-esteem focuses on how much you like yourself, like how positive your self-evaluation is, right? And, you know, most of us do some pretty nasty things to feel good about ourselves. For instance, why do bullies in early middle school start to bully? So that they can feel good about themselves, so they can feel bigger and smarter and cooler and stronger than that little wimpy kid they're picking on, right? Mm-hmm. Prejudice stems from the need for high self-esteem. And the other problem with self-esteem is that for most people, it's contingent on success. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe you have high self-esteem on a good hair day, but not so much on a bad hair day. Or when you succeed at a work project, but then your self-esteem deserts you when you have a failure. So it's more contingent, and it's more based on social comparison, right? The need to be better than others to feel okay about myself. So, I mean, we know self-esteem is good for well-being. People are less depressed, less anxious, happier, really, when they have high self-esteem. But the way they get their self-esteem is not always so healthy. So self-compassion, it really offers all the same mental health benefits of self-esteem, in the sense that, you know, you aren't judging yourself. You don't feel bad about yourself. You feel like a worthy human being. But it's not based on being better than others. It's just based on being like a flawed, imperfect human being like everyone else. You know, I can check that box. I can do that. It's not conditional, right? Yet the idea is, right when self-esteem fails you, and that's when you know, make a mistake or you do something wrong, self-compassion steps in to pick up the pieces. Self-compassion says, you know, hey, you failed. Well, it happens. I'm still here for you. I still care about you, regardless of whether or not you failed or succeeded. So we know, for instance, through research that the sense of self-worth linked to self-compassion is much more stable than the sense of self-worth linked to self-esteem, which tends to go up and down a lot more. So you might say it has the benefits without the pitfalls.
Well, it's interesting because I guess the way you're talking about it, you know, when we look at self-esteem, it's really something that's based on judgment, right? Like, I judge myself as this place, and you're at this place, and it's all about kind of judging where you are, whether you're good or bad on the scale, and all about, you know, comparing to others. And then just looking at ourselves with self-compassion, obviously, is just having that innate understanding that it's hard. It's hard to be a human being. It's not easy.
That's right. And that making mistakes and imperfections is actually part of what makes us human. Right. So when we're on the self-esteem treadmill, it's almost as if we keep chasing after perfection. Like if we try that a little bit harder, maybe we'll be perfect or at least close to it. Whereas self-compassion just abandons that agenda, and we just learn to support ourselves as we are and to feel worthy as we are. You know, we don't have to accomplish anything to be worthy. All human beings are worthy of kindness and respect. And then, of course, it doesn't mean we don't also want to grow and reach our full potential, but we don't grow and reach our full potential because we aren't good enough as we are. We want to grow and reach our full potential because we care about ourselves. We want to be happy. So the motivation of self-compassion is quite different than the motivation of self-esteem.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that people, I think there's kind of a fear of it, right? Like people are worried that they're not going to, if I'm compassionate with myself, if I'm not hard on myself and harsh on myself, then I'm not going to become better, where because I am flawed and I need to become better. But you point out in your book that research says that it's actually easier to admit areas of improvement and make improvement when we are self-compassionate.
Yes, absolutely. So first of all, research shows that the number one block to self-compassion, as you say, is the fear that, you know, we'll be unmotivated, we're going to lose our edge, we're not going to reach our goals. We really think that the only thing that gets us moving is fear of self-punishment, you know. But there is another thing that gets us moving, and that's kindness and encouragement, right? So if you think back to maybe, you know, high school man, or maybe you're on a sports team or in drama club or something, maybe you had the experience of two different types of coaches. One was the really mean coach. He said, you'll never amount to anything, you lazy good for nothing, and yells at you all the time. Well, it is kind of going to work, right? You're going to want to avoid the coach yelling at you. So you're going to try, but it backfires in the long run because you lose faith in yourself. You get nervous because you're agitated. You have a lot of performance anxiety. And at the end of the day, you're more likely to give up. But hopefully you also had some experience of a really kind, encouraging coach. So when you said, yeah, it's okay, you know, you messed up, but here's how to make it better. You know, who gave you constructive criticism, who believed in you, who encouraged you, who supported you. Now, typically those types of coaches we learn a lot more from and we're a lot more motivated by. So it's really just learning to, again, be this good, supportive inner coach inside, as opposed to the mean one who yells at us all the time. You know, so both work, but what research definitely shows that it's more effective to be compassionate, and that when you fail, you're more likely to pick yourself up and try again. You're less afraid of failure, and you're more likely to keep trying even when things are difficult. And that's really what we need with motivation.
So you're really talking about, and it's amazing to me how many things come down to this, because I'm very interested in the way we learn and the way we act in life. But what I'm hearing you saying is that it really is coming down to that intrinsic, internal motivation versus the external motivation. You're kind of pointing out the difference between the fear of, you know, fear of the carrot and the stick kind of thing versus I want to do this, whatever I want to do, because this is just life and this is what I want to do. And it's okay for me to make mistakes because I have this compassion. Yeah.
Yes. And that's a very good point. In an odd way, self-criticism is a type of extrinsic motivation. You aren't doing it because you want to learn and grow. You're doing it because you're afraid of punishment. So even though it comes from the inside, it's still an extrinsic motivator. There's tons of research showing that intrinsic motivation, you know, wanting to learn and grow because you're curious and you're interested and, you know, failure is a learning opportunity, that's much more effective and much more sustainable over time.
So this interests me because then it goes, you know, so it goes back to parenting and kind of how we were raised and things like that. And I feel like in our society and in our culture, we have a long history of very authoritarian families, yes, where there's a lot of harsh criticism, there's a lot of punishment. There, you know, in years past, there's whippings and beatings, you know, yes, and real extreme, like external punishment for trying to sort of get people to do what they want, children to do what they want to do. So if we want self-compassion, right, sort of the opposite of that is our self-criticism. So where does that come from? How is that shaped in our lives, that internal voice?
Yeah, well, certainly, I mean, I think there are a lot of influences, but certainly we know that one is how our parents raised us. So people who are raised by very critical parents, you know, unsurprisingly, tend to be more self-critical. You know, people who are raised with secure attachment to their parents, that knew that their parents would, you know, accept them unconditionally, they're more likely to have self-compassion than those who, you know, their love was contingent, or, you know, some people had really abusive parents, and they're the ones who struggle the most with self-compassion because it wasn't modeled for them at all. But I think it's not just parents. I also think there is a lot of pressure in our culture to be perfectionistic. And I think a lot of the messages we get in the media are, you know, you got to do it, you got to succeed, you know, got to buy my product in order to be a worthwhile person. So I think we're also influenced by those messages. You know, and what I think is happening with self-compassion, and this kind of relates to the whole topic of parenting, is we're really kind of re-parenting ourselves, right? When we fail or we're struggling or we're afraid, we actually give ourselves the type of unconditional love, warmth, support, and nourishment that, you know, maybe we didn't get from our parents. Hopefully we did, but maybe we didn't. Regardless, now as adults, we can give it to ourselves. And so we start to learn to do things like tune in to how we're speaking to ourselves. What type of language are we using? What's our tone of voice? Is it cold? Is it warm? Is it harsh? And then we actually learn to, you know, create an internal dialogue that kind of represents this ideally compassionate parent or friend to a child.
Oh my gosh, there's so many things I want to respond to in what you said, and that, like, you know, that being able to even be in touch with that internal voice, obviously we need to be able to sort of hear it and see it, and that mindfulness, and that's one of the three, you know, parts of yourself.
Yeah, and it's the first step.
Yeah.
None of this is possible without mindfulness. Mindfulness is the foundation. Absolutely.
Absolutely. But then I'm thinking about the parents who are listening to you and saying, like, you know, and we want to think that we love our kids unconditionally. Like, of course, everyone might say, I love my kids unconditionally. But what happens is when our kids sometimes have, like, really big, difficult feelings, like anger and, you know, frustration, and they go, you know, they're losing it, maybe yeah, at us, our behavior kind of shows that it's really hard to then love your kids unconditionally in that moment, especially, yeah. Is it true that it, maybe especially if we have trouble accepting our own difficult feelings and having that compassion for ourselves?
Yes. Well, so put it this way, you know, the link between how compassionate you are to yourself and how compassionate you are to others isn't actually that strong, just because it's in a certain direction. So there are a lot of people who are actually very kind and compassionate to others who treat themselves badly. So it's actually not really true that you have to be kind to yourself to be good to others. There's lots of people who do it. It's more that it's just hard to sustain being kind to others if you aren't kind to yourself. So what happens, you know, if let's say you're a caregiver or a parent, what you need to do with your parent and your child start some screaming or losing it or something is you actually first need to give yourself compassion. And that will give you the resources needed to sustain compassion for your child, right? So it's not like you need to have the compassion in order to be compassionate, but it's so much easier to get thrown off track, to lose it, to be reactive when you aren't saying, oh, it's so difficult that my child's losing it. And first, like, tend to your own needs, you know, put on your own oxygen mask first before you try to calm your child down.
And that's certainly something I learned with my son, who was autistic, that, you know, if I lost it, and let's face it, I did, sometimes I would lose it. But he would actually just get more agitated very quickly if my way of being with him was agitated. But when I could remember to give myself compassion and just, remember this is so hard for me right now, and, you know, kind of care for myself first, then not only would I have more resources to attend to him, but he actually fed off of my mood. And if I was calmer, he was calmer. So, I think it's absolutely essential for parents to have self-compassion, especially when they're struggling with their child. If you just try to say, oh, I love my child unconditionally without tending to your own needs first, it's going to be really hard to sustain that.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go back to what you're saying about sort of our inner dialogue and kind of noticing our inner dialogue. And you write in your book that, like, if we had control over our maladaptive thoughts, emotions, and behaviors, you wouldn't still have them, which I thought was such like a wonderful, like, duh, a statement. Like, why, of course, don't we realize that, right? Like, clearly we don't have complete control of our actions, or else I'd only act in ways that we approved of. I mean, that was so, I love those times when it's just like, of course. So can you talk to that and tell us what you mean a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, so I think this comes from the illusion of independence and control. Like, somehow we think we're these totally independent units who have complete free will, and we can do what we want and be perfect and get it right all the time. But that's just not reality. We are interdependent in so many ways. I mean, the weather, what we've eaten, what that person just said to us, the political climate, my body, the fact that my hormones are, going a certain way, which I didn't choose. There are so many causes and conditions that lead us to think as we do, that lead us to have the emotional reactions we do. So really, we don't have a lot of control. And one of the biggest gifts of mindfulness practice, and especially meditation practice, is kind of realizing that this idea that we have control is an illusion. But although we don't have total control, it doesn't mean we can't do anything either. So what we can learn to do is learn how to relate with kindness to whatever's arising. And, we can make a couple adjustments, and we can do what we can. It's not like we can't do anything. It's not like we're totally passive, but we just need to realize that perfection is actually not attainable. So just do the best we can and kind of, care for ourselves. And when we make a mistake, just try to be understanding and give ourselves support and encouragement so that we're maximizing the conditions out of which hopefully skillful action will grow. You can't really control yourself, but you can try to plant the seeds that are more likely to grow into better actions. So it's just a different model. It's more of a natural model, which is true, right? A plant doesn't grow on its own. It needs water and it needs soil, but you also can plant seeds, one plant or another. So that's what we're really doing with compassion, is we're just trying to water the seeds of wholesomeness and not spend as much time watering the seeds that lead to bad behavior or, harmful behavior.
Absolutely. Just like Thich Nhat Hanh says, we practice selective watering. I love that.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So one thing that you brought up in your book that I love this is a little equation from, I think you said it, maybe it came from Xin Zhen Yang, which is suffering equals pain times resistance. So tell us what you mean by that.
Right. And so he's using the term suffering in a particular way, which is basically there's pain, emotional pain, physical pain, mental pain. But suffering is kind of it's directly a result of how much we resist the fact that pain is here. So just to give a, kind of a cliche example, if you're stuck in a traffic jam, yeah, it's annoying and maybe you're going to be late and that's painful and annoying. But if you get really angry at the fact that you're in a traffic jam and feel like I shouldn't be caught in a traffic jam, all those shoulds and resistance to the fact that something is happening just make things that much worse. And there's a lot of research that shows that the more we resist what's happening, not only does it make it more intense, but it makes things last longer, right? So whether that resistance is by getting really angry and frustrated, or whether the resistance comes from avoidance and like thought suppression, We know that the energy you give to a difficult thought or emotion by either suppressing it or reacting to it actually makes it stronger and makes it last longer. So it's so funny. My son, he's 15 now, and he hates self-compassion because he's like, don't give me that self-compassion, Mom. I don't want to accept the pain. And I'm like, okay, go for it. If you figure out a way how to make the pain go away, tell me about it, you know, but I don't think it's really possible. That's the thing. It just doesn't work. You know, we know it doesn't work. If pain is here, it goes away in its own time, and we can try to help, you know, create optimal conditions for it to pass. We can't force it to go. And if we try to force it to go, it just makes it worse. You know, so that's really a basic principle of life, really, that I think most people come to recognize in one way or another. The good thing about self-compassion, so what self-compassion adds to mindfulness, is mindfulness talks a lot about non-resistance, being with what is in an accepting, non-judgmental way. But it doesn't necessarily, it kind of depends who's teaching the mindfulness, it doesn't necessarily talk about warmth and kindness and soothing. So in other words, you know, yes, we need to accept what's here and not judge it, but it really helps if we say to ourselves, oh, this is so hard for you, darling. I'm here for you. What can I do to help? You know, so that, that emotional warmth that actually, which helps us feel safe, which helps, makes it easier not to resist. So mindfulness is key, but, you know, in self-compassion, on top of the mindfulness, there's the kindness. And then there's also kind of the wisdom of recognizing common humanity, right? Just recognizing that, hey, we're all imperfect. We all struggle. We're all interdependent, you know. And so you might think kindness and the wisdom of common humanity, they do arise naturally out of mindfulness practice. But if we bring them in explicitly and intentionally, it just makes it more powerful in the moment.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I coach women, and that's, we work with this so much because there, we tend to be so hard on ourselves. I was thinking about you and your story, and I imagine there were times as you were raising your son, as you said, he has autism, that you, I imagine you must have been very grateful to have found these concepts and to have found these practices throughout your time raising your son.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't know how I would have coped without them. I mean, the very day he got diagnosed, I was actually on my way to a meditation retreat, and I'd been practicing mindfulness and self-compassion for about 7 years. And it's so funny, you know, my husband, I said to him, you know, don't worry, I'll cancel my retreat. We'll process this together. And he said, no, go to your retreat, do your self-compassion stuff, and then come back and help me. Because he'd seen, you know, how useful it was to help cope with challenge. So, you know, when I was at the retreat, all these feelings were coming up for me. You know, feelings you think you aren't supposed to have as a mother. Feelings of disappointment, even some irrational shame, fear. And this is toward the person you love most in the world, your precious child, you know. But because of my practice, I knew that the only thing I really could do was to let it all in, to not judge any thoughts or feelings I was having as good or bad, just to let them arise. But most importantly, to just give myself great love and kindness and support and compassion for how hard it was, and just really kind of really trying to be there for myself, helping me to feel like, you know, safe. And also, you know, remembering common humanity. Yeah, so it was not all parents, they didn't face autism, but usually parents have some form of struggle or another with their kids. It could be other physical conditions, mental conditions, just conflictual relationships. It's not, you know, because for a while, for a few moments, I started to go down the path of self-pity. You know, why me? Why can't I have a normal child like everyone else? And then I realized, what does that mean, a normal child? I mean, there's no child who's normal. It's just kind of a particular flavor of, you know, some of the challenge. And so when I was able to do that, it just made it so much easier, first of all, to accept the autism, to accept the challenges that it posed for me. But really, ultimately, to accept Rowan, it just gave me so much more ability. The more I could accept myself and accept my difficult feelings and accept my pain around it, the more I had available to be with him as he was and to give to him. So I don't know how I've gotten through. I'm sure I would have, but it would have been a lot harder, I can tell you. Yeah.
I love what you're saying about this acceptance, right? Like what we resist persists, and that self-acceptance that is so essential to underlying this as parents. So what advice do you give parents who want to practice more self-compassion and maybe want to just be able to be more accepting of their kids?
Yeah. So again, the first thing to do is to not only accept, but, you know, it's more than acceptance. It's actively soothing, comforting, supporting, providing warmth to ourselves. So things like putting your hands on your heart, saying words, the types of encouraging, supportive words you might say to a friend, really actively kind of reparenting ourselves. Like, you know, maybe if you were lucky and you had a good mother, when you were upset, she would, you know, give you a hug and say just the right things. And the tone of her voice would be just what the tone you needed to hear to know that it was safe and it was going to be okay. Well, whether or not you actually had that type of mother, we can learn to do that with ourselves, to really say, what do I need right now to comfort and care for myself in the moment, and learn to start to give it to us. You know, in addition to accepting all our pain and accepting all our imperfection, mm-hmm. which is really key. And so I really, you know, counsel parents, when you're feeling like you want to tear your kid's head off and that happens, you know, usually the first side is guilt. Oh my God, I shouldn't be having the thought that I want to tear my kid's head off. I'm a bad mother. Then you might try to, or bad father, then you might try to like just love your little kid a little bit more conditionally in that moment. You know, how well does that work? Really, a lot of it, especially as a parent, is giving yourself permission to validate and acknowledge your own pain. Mm. You know, I think parenting is supposed to be a one-way street, that it's just about caring for the child, but you have to care for yourself as a parent. You know, you have to say, this is so hard for me. I'm feeling so overwhelmed. And maybe, you know, put your hands on your heart, or if you can find, we find that physical expressions of kindness are really powerful, because the body is actually designed to respond to them because we're mammals. So if you can find some way of touching yourself that really lets your body know, hey, you're here, and it actually starts to change your physiology, you start to feel more safe. You start to feel, once you feel more safe, you actually have more options in terms of thinking how to respond. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that first before you try to deal with your kid. But if it's just one way and you think you're just supposed to be this perfect parent, you're just supposed to give and not care about your own needs, it really won't be very sustainable.
No. I mean, listeners, take Kristen's advice and see her example of when she heard that diagnosis, that you went on a retreat and you took a number of days to yourself. And I think that's a really great example, to take that time to really ground yourself. That's beautiful.
But, you know, what I'm talking about is a little different than self-care. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people are told for parents, you should have self-care. Well, let's face it, self-care isn't always possible. We aren't always in a position where we can go on a retreat, or we may not have the time or the money to get a massage or take a yoga class. So self-care is good. You know, do as much self-care as you can. But regardless of that, you know, the problem with self-care is that all happens off the job. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. What we need is a way to be there for ourselves in the midst of the struggle, when you're with your kid. When the conflict is happening, when the tantrum is happening, when the emotions are there present in the moment, that's when you need self-compassion. So you can do simple practices like, I still do it, but when my son was tantruming, right? Just breathing in for yourself, breathing in compassion for yourself, breathing in wishes for your own well-being for yourself. And then you can breathe out for your child. So it doesn't have to be one way, you know, in for me, out for you, breathe in and out for you. Little practices like that you can do, which, you know, don't take any time or money, be done right there in the moment to help you get through those difficult times. So really the biggest thing parents need to do is just to remember to validate the fact that it's hard for them, to help, you know, give themselves kindness and comfort and care and support in the midst of their challenges. And that is actually what's going to, you know, most enable them to be there for their kids.
Yeah, yes. And after we lose it too, that comes to do those same things. So then, and that is what can enable us to grow and change and make different choices as best we can.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So like, you know, a lot of research, people think that if you're self-compassionate, it means letting yourself off the hook. It's exactly the opposite. Research shows that when it's safe to admit you failed because you have self-compassion, you're much more likely to admit it when you've made a mistake, and you're actually much more likely to try to repair the situation. Again, because you aren't like fighting against this feeling of, oh my God, if I admit that I did this, I will be flooded with shame. I'm not going to go there. I'm going to blame someone else, right? When it's safe to acknowledge you're imperfect and you make mistakes, you're much more likely to do so. So.
Oh, Kristen, oh my gosh, I could talk to you about for hours on this. I love it. I can't thank you enough for the work that you've done, like making this, showing that through your, you know, research that this is so, you know, that these teachings that people have taught for many years are in fact true. And I really, really appreciate your work and what you've done. So how can the listener find out more about you and what you're doing besides get her amazing book, Self-Compassion. You'll love it.
Well, that's the place to start. And I've actually made my website a free resource. If you just Google self-compassion, you'll find it, selfcompassion.org. So I've got the research on there. If you're a research nerd, I have guided meditations, I have exercises. In October, and there'll be a link on my website, that we're going to have an online self-compassion training course, like a shortened version of our 8-week course. It'll be 8 weeks, but only an hour a week. So that might be something you could think about taking when we come out with our workbook. That will also be on there. So I would just say go to my website and maybe even sign up for my mailing list, and I'll send you out notices when new things are available, including new meditations. So that's probably the easiest place to start.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, Kristen. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Hunter. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening. Isn't Kristen amazing? And this work on self-compassion is so, so amazing. I really encourage you to get the self-compassion book. It has so much. And self-compassion is an essential component of what we teach in the Mindful Parenting course, which is really starting soon. And if you want a taste of that, want to join us in a free live training that is happening from October 9th through 13th, you can join it from anywhere in the world. It's totally free. You can just go to mindfulparentingcourse.com/free training. So that's mindfulparentingcourse.com/free training. And the difference with the Mindful Parenting Training Course, which every other parenting thing lacks, is that we talk about not only how to respond to your kids so that you're more effective as a parent and you have better relationships and better connection and things like that, but we also work on that super, super essential component of you, creating that foundation of mindfulness so that you can respond rather than react, you know, bit by bit, working on that foundation of self-compassion so that you can give it, just like we talked about with Kristen. It's amazing. So if you have any questions, feel free to email me at hunter@hunteryoga.com. Please subscribe and leave a rating. Remember, you can do that right on your phone now. It's so easy. You just click on the podcast app that you listen to and just search for Mindful Mama Podcast, even if you're subscribed, and then you can click on ratings and reviews and you'll see a thing right there. And I've gotten some new ones. Yay! I wish I had like sound effects, like clapping. Yay. So thank you so much to PGH Lauren for the 5-star review, saying it's relatable and informative. She says, it often feels as if Hunter knows just what I need to hear. I use what I learn in parenting my own boys and with clients I see in my mental health private practice. That's amazing. Thank you so much, Lauren. Thank you so much to Pietriov Musinski. That's so cool. Another 5-star review says, can't say enough good things. And another, this is like the week for reviews. You guys are filling me up. It's awesome. Another 5-star review from Ben's Mama One. And she says that thank you for helping me be a better parent. So, so cool. Thank you guys so much. And if that is an amazing way to support the podcast, if you've gotten something out of it, is to leave a review. And man, we need to share this interview with Kristen Neff everywhere, people. Share it with your friends. Who doesn't need more self-compassion in our world, right? Who doesn't need that? So please do share it with your friends. Coming up in the next episode, I am back on with my friend Carla, and we are talking about discipline. Dun, dun, dun. So be sure to check that out as soon as it comes out. They've been coming out very regularly now. I'm patting myself on the back for very regular, steady podcasts on Tuesday morning. So check it out there. Make sure you're subscribed. And go over to that mindfulparentingcourse.com/free training and sign up. And I can't wait to get started with that. And then finally, I'm so grateful you're here. Thank you so much. If you are listening to my voice right now, I really have so much gratitude for you and this, you know, this connection that we have. It grows. We are creating ripple effects. You are creating ripple effects, feeding yourself with watering with good media, watering your good seeds. And really, that's what we want to do. Just like we talked to with Kristen, we want to selectively water. So I'm wishing you a beautiful week, my friend. I'm wishing you calm and peace within. And sending that out to you. Namaste. Are you frustrated with parenting? Do you want to practice conscious, compassionate parenting, but you don't know how? It's not easy, and there's no roadmap for this until now. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, creator of the Mindful Parenting Course, and I know how frustrating it is because I've been there. I really struggled as a young mom, and when I found myself yelling and triggered by my child a lot, I knew there had to be a better way, and there is. Mindful parenting is different from other parenting trainings. They don't tell you that all of that good advice is as good as useless when our internal stress response is triggered. Mindful parenting teaches you research-based tools and practices to reduce your stress response so you can respond rather than react. And it teaches you exactly what to say so that you can create willing cooperation from your child. You can learn more and enroll at mindfulparentingcourse.com, and you can join us for a free live training from October 9th through 13th, where you'll learn why your kids don't listen to you, what punishment really teaches, how to tame a tantrum at every age, and the hidden myth that undermines your parenting. Sign up now at mindfulparentingcourse.com/free training. I'll see you there.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.